pleasure to be here this afternoon to present our annual report for 2013. I am accompanied by my apart from the party, Mr. Gordon Jacob. Mr. Trego is our Vice President of Corporate Planning Strategy.
Kerry Larkin, Chief Risk and Compliance Officer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Jan Pavi, Vice President, Event Management.
Good afternoon, Bakoli Demane, ST Vice President, Trading Supply and Logistics.
Good afternoon, everybody. Andrew Dippenock, Vice President, New Venture Upstream.
Good afternoon.
Chair, honorable members, my name is Wes Banana, so airport at team. Thank you.
Chair, I realize I did not introduce myself. My name is Mr. Yonke Matamo, CEO of Petro State.
Chair, honorable members, my name is Tama Kuturi, Vice President of the Affairs and Shift Services.
Thank you very much. We are also accompanied by the Institute Chairman of the Board of Petrosa, Mr. Peter Nyango, and we're also accompanied by the Chairman of our Audit Committee, Mr. Shatayo, but I will just allow him to introduce himself.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Bukhazwane, the Management Director, member of the Audit Committee of Petrosa.
Honourable Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Cesar Mwango, the Interim Chair of Petrosa.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Mr. Satwa, the Chairman of the Audit and Risk Committee of Petrosa.
Advocate Matumisa, Management Director and member of the Audit and Risk Committee.
Thank you, Chair. If Chair may indulge me, I thought that it would be prudent to perhaps just update you on the happenings labour unrest that we had at the plant. May I proceed to that, Chair? Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. That would be the dynamic team from Petrosa that is tasked with growing this national oil company to its full potential. Chair, if you allow me, I will then quickly give a feedback. This morning, my chairman did announce that we had some labor unrest, and I wonder if it's appropriate for me just to update the group what has happened and we are. Is that right, Chair?
Just 1 minute.
1 minute. All right. Thank you, Chair. Just to say that what actually happened is that yesterday about 2,000 external contract employees embarked on a work stoppage. Issues it seems are related to it as cited as a main concern. I want to emphasize that these are contract employees. These are not Petro SA employees. And most of them are readers and sitters who are employed through our contracting system. We do have processes in terms of these issues where they're supposed to, we've got a site-wide labor agreement between ourselves and contractors who are supposed to adhere to it, but they have not adhered to it. Our priority at this stage is the safety of all our people, both permanent and contractors, and we've taken measures to ensure that the safety of the plant equipment is not compromised. Currently, there are negotiations in terms of understanding what the issues are, and we will, I think, prior to our to the end of our session, be able to have feedback how far they've gone. That's all I wanted to say, Chair. Thank you on that issue. Okay, in terms of the annual report 2013, I'm going to cover the following issues. Our mandate, I'll touch briefly upon the issues that we discussed last year, progress to date. I'll talk about the operating environment, the highlights, our strategic objectives, and therefore the performance against those objectives. We'll talk about transformation because it's key to some of the things that we're doing. We'll deal with the financial performance of the company. We'll go with the audit opinion and end up with the closing remarks. As a national oil company chair, we are mandated to operate as a commercial entity and create value for the shareholder and make sure that we advance the national objectives in the petroleum industry and, of course, to complement and promote government policy and strategic trust. That is our mandate, and that is what we endeavor to do in terms of our strategic objectives. Very briefly, Chair, on the issue that we discussed last year when we were here. At the time, we did report that PSA was facing feedstock challenges at Russell Bay. We continue to face those challenges, Chair. At the time, we had just begun with the Equasi offshore project, and to report, those feedstock challenges, I said, remain, but the Equasi progress is underway, and we have begun the drilling program, where we're going to be drilling 5 wells in total over the next few years, and we have begun on well number 1 and are preparing to go into well number 2. With regards to the sale of Gas Nigeria, members will recall that there was litigation at the time from the sale that we had made of Gas Nigeria. This litigation, I'm pleased to announce, has now been finalized in our favor. There were also some outstanding environmental management matters in Mossel Bay, and I'm also pleased to report to the House that all the recommendations that were made in terms of ameliorating those issues are being implemented. At the time, we also reported that we were busy with the Ghana Save acquisition. It had not yet been finalized. To report here is that the transaction has been finalized and is already contributing to our growth strategy. We talked about investigations into procurement irregularities, which were underway at the time when we came to report. The investigations that were started by PetroSA have been completed, and those recommendations are now being implemented. The ministerial investigation is still in progress. Chair, I think I have 2 pages. There's another page missing, sorry. Yes, thank you. Chair, with regards to where we operate, I thought it would be wise just to start off by talking about the global petroleum industry in which we operate, because we're not operating in a vacuum as PetroSA. It has remained volatile and very highly competitive in the last year. The crude prices of the year averaged about $110 per barrel, and that had come down from the previous year, which was $114 per barrel. The implication, therefore, Chair, of these changes are the following. High crude prices actually do increase the cost of our imported inputs, although we do have a positive impact on the revenues. We had low production rates through our plant. I think the members know that because of the dwindling feedstock, we had turned down the production throughput through our plant, and those low production rates actually meant that we did not benefit from high prices. Instead of the exchange rate, our average exchange rate was $8.53 to a dollar. The previous year it was $7.45. Now what that weak rand does is that it increases our capital costs
and the cost of all the imported items like the condensate we utilize as a top-up for our plants in the refinery in Muscle Bay. What, on the other hand, of course, the positive here is that we have a positive impact on revenues when we've got a weaker rand. So, Chair, just to conclude in terms of the operating environment, our low growth rate and the high employment levels that we have in the country and also the high levels of inequality and poverty do remain a concern for us as PetroSA as a national oil company. And we are committed to deliver on our mandate, and we will share in the following slides how it is that we are doing the following. So the year under review, Chair, 2012-2013, in general, we did continue to operate safely, and we did operate profitably in the face of extremely severe challenges of our declining indigenous feedstock, which I know the members are aware of because we spoke about this last year. And of course, we had rising feedstock costs, which is the condensate that we use to augment the gas through the plant. We are committed, even though we have all those challenges, to South Africa's quest for security of supply and, of course, socio-economic growth and transformation. As a result of the conditions under which we operated last year, our revenue was up by 36% from 14.4 billion to 19.6 billion, but conversely, our net profit was down by 54% from 1.28 billion to 593 million. Overriding, Chair, all of this is that the Muscle Bay refinery sustainability has remained a key focus area for ourselves. We will go into the detail. I'm just doing the highlight at this point in terms of the reasons why we have a decline. An increase in revenue and such a sharp decline in the net profit. Project Equate, Chair, which is the project to augment our dwindling feedstocks, which is off the south coast of South Africa, is in progress, and we can also unpack that in detail in terms of how far we are. We also, Chair, embarked on a project to bring alternate feedstock to top up. As members will know, from inception, the gas that we are going to utilize, that we find from the Project Equate, is insufficient to top up the refinery for it to run at complete throughput and have a longer tenure in terms of the gas reserves. So as a result, we are looking at the possibility of importing liquefied natural gas to augment that gas that we're going to get from Equate. So that project that we spoke about last year has progressed, and public consultations started early 2013. I spoke about the acquisition of oil reserves in Ghana, which is completed during the year, and asset is performing well. One of the key deliverables that we have as a national oil company is the issue of transformation. We can report very proudly, Chair, that we built and handed over our first integrated energy center in Bizana in the Eastern Cape, which is quite a depressed part of the province, and it was handed over to the community to operate. In terms of our corporate social investment, we spent about 21 million rands invested in community projects. Because of the fact that we are faced with a changing business, but also in the quest of keeping our employee force upgraded and trained, we spent about 2.4% of our total wage bill on training about 1,300 of our employees of the workforce. That equates to about 71% of the workforce. I'll just maybe make a point here to say that the norm in terms of the training amount is recommended to be 1% of total wage, and we spent 2.4% of our total wage bill on training. We also, in terms of, in terms of the procurement, 52.7% of our total discretionary procurement was spent with BE companies, and we sold 287 million liters to BE companies. They will know that one of the challenges that resellers and BE resellers are faced with is, one, access to product, and two, access to infrastructure in which to distribute that product. But we have managed to sell 287 million liters to the BE companies. That's just a picture, Chair, of Mbizana and what's to come in the future. We have also planned other integrated energy centers in different parts of the country. And essentially what this does, Chair, I think it was a very heartwarming moment when we went to hand over this this integrated energy center, because the community, it brings a difference in a community which, if they didn't have a single spot where they can access all the different forms of energy, it does bring a total difference in the daily lifestyle. Just the one flat chair which talks about our strategic objective. It continued to be, we did present this last year, we presented it again this year, that our strategic objective is to be a sustainable, fully integrated, commercially competitive national oil company supplying at least 25% of South Africa's liquid fuel needs, chair. This chair is the building blocks in terms of how we are planning to get there. Members will note that if we continue on our current trajectory with the gas that we have and the feedstock that we have offshore, we aren't able to actually grow this into a national oil company. Currently, members will know that if you push the plant to full capacity, we have the capacity to produce close to about 45,000-48,000 barrels, and that is only equating to about 3-5% of the total market in this country. You cannot be a national oil company and you're only able to supply 3-5%. You are unable to have a positive impact either on transformation nor on the growth imperatives of the country, nor are you able to have any impact in terms of the security of supply of liquid petroleum fuels in the country. It is therefore imperative that this national oil company continues to embark on the strategic objective of ensuring that we can be like other national companies worldwide to sustainable, fully integrated, and commercially competitive. If I deal with the performance against objectives, Chair, what we presenting here, Chair, is how we have reported in the annual report about how we have a summary of how we have performed against our objectives. The green denotes that we achieved, the orange denotes partially achieved, and the red is not achieved. I think earlier on, but I should repeat it, we are very stringent about the issue of non-achievement. Even if you achieved, you had a target of 8%, if you achieve at 79%, it denotes as that you did not achieve your target. So with regard to, I'll probably talk about some of the challenges, and then I'll talk about where we have managed to achieve our targets. With regards to the challenges, I think when it comes to the recruitment of people with disabilities, we had targeted that 3% of all the appointments that we make in the company should be people living with disabilities, but we did only manage to achieve 1% of that. In terms of the women appointments, we did achieve, in fact, we 39% versus 30% of all appointments were women. I think compared to last year, Chair, I'm sure members, if they remember, we are starting to see around the team that evidence of the shift from where we were to 39% of our appointments being women. Probably also pleased to mention here, Chair, that the shutdown that we're currently having, we have the manager of the shutdown at Muscle Bay, and she is a female engineer. That's the first, better say at this point. Going further, in terms of preferential procurement, Chair, we did achieve 53%, as I said earlier, 57. All right. We had targeted 50%, so we did achieve our target and a little bit more. 52, yeah, I think this is round, yeah, this is rounded off, that's the thing, it's 52.7, that's why I was wondering. Sorry, Chair. In terms of the BE sales, again, we achieved our target. In terms of the gross margin percentage, we achieved 11% versus a margin target of 8%. And then we had also put an objective that a KPI, key performance indicator, where we wanted to make sure that we can have a 10% variance in terms of actual versus budget, and unfortunately we only achieved 5%, and of the 10% that we wanted to in terms of the variance. One of the areas where I think from a lot of focused hard work and focused direction is the area of safety, health, environment and quality, where all our performance against objectives were achieved, which is the issue of the DIFR. We had targeted 0.4 and we achieved 0.14. I think earlier on there was a discussion around what does that actually translate into. That is very, very good performance in terms of that. Our environmental incidents, well, we had targeted 10 and we got 9, very, very close. And we're not happy about that, so we've actually put in measures to make sure that we can reduce those environmental incidents. We're very proud to announce, Chair, that we managed to retain our ISO 9001 certification. And in this case, we even included the upstream, which hadn't been there before. So we increased the scope and we got our recertification. We are very proud of that recertification. With the occupational hygiene survey, what this is that we had wanted to encourage employees to go through the occupational hygiene survey, and we had targeted that 80% this year of the employees were going to go through that. Unfortunately, we only achieved 79%. But because we're very stringent in the manner in which we measure our performance, we state that as a non-achievement because of the fact that we didn't reach our 80%. This is operations, Chair. Under the operations objectives, we, in terms of our production, the GTL refinery production from the indigenous gas, we did, we surpassed our target. Instead of 3.7 million barrels, we achieved 4.7 million barrels. In terms of the gas loop processing efficiency, we did achieve our target of 80%. We have, as I mentioned earlier, we've got the project of the importation of LNG as a possible top-up to the feedstock. We achieved our target. We had planned to achieve our target by end August 2012. We did that by end of June 2012. The only delay that we have where we did not achieve was that we had wanted to have start issuing certain service contracts, but we did not achieve that. We did issue the service contracts for various reasons, in the sense that the scope, we looked at increasing the scope of the project, and we decided to, because of that, we had to put in abeyance the issuing of those contracts until we had got total alignment and buy-in from all the different stakeholders who are involved or affected by the importation of liquefied natural gas. What I didn't mention here is that one of the highlights was that we actually signed an agreement with Eskom last year to jointly work on the LNG project, as them being a future off-taker of the liquefied natural gas for power production. With regards to equity, again, we did not, we partially achieved that. We wanted to deliver the project on schedule, but we did not achieve anything. We managed to get the equipment installation targets. What we did not, the schedule target was not achieved from the inception due to the fact that the rig arrived very late and we started the whole process of drilling much later than we had planned to. Although I must say that we already have started, but it started not on target according to our plan when we came for approval of the 2012-2013 plan. Again, continuing on our growth, growth objectives, we have not yet, as the members will know, we have expressed the desire in terms of our building blocks towards Vision 2020 to be more active and present in the downstream arena. And we had planned that we would have completed that process by the 31st of March this year, but we have not achieved that as yet. In terms of Project Mtombo, members know we are looking at the project of a refinery, a future refinery to be built in Kuka. The chairman of CEF alluded to the timing of those projects this morning, but we had targeted that we would have completed our joint study by the 30th of November and get approval to proceed into the next phase, which would be phase two of our joint study with Sinopec. But in other words, we did achieve those. And in fact, what has not yet happened is just an update that we are now busy negotiating with the Industrial Development Corporation in terms of taking this phase a little bit, taking phase further. We had also embarked on developing new trading markets. Members will know that up to a point, Petros K produced liquefied petroleum products and then sold them to the oil companies. And then we went, when the agreement finished in 2007, we needed to embark on finding our own market where we are trading the products. So apart from the product coming from the refinery, we had to find and develop new trading markets for product. We had then targeted that we are going to sell about 120 million liters. We did not manage to sell 120 million liters. That's hand in hand with the next objective as well, which was that we wanted to, in terms of the commercial and industrial sales strategy, which we had approved, we wanted to also go into the commercial market and have sold 300 million liters, and we did not achieve that target of 300 million liters. In terms of the having now embarked onto, you know, into a new area where we're selling beyond beyond the gate, we then wanted to make sure that we are understanding our customers. So in terms of our customer service, we planned that we'd have a 70% approval, and we're happy to report that we did manage to get the 70% approval. On the upstream, we have targeted to add 15 million barrels of oil equivalent reserves by 31st of March 2013. We're pleased to state that we didn't only do that, but we surpassed our target and we added 24.7. Where we had serious challenges is the issue of the farm out of our acreage in Equatorial Guinea. Members will know that we have this acreage that we had since 2006-2007, and because of the capital intensity of exploration, it was decided that we must farm out a certain percentage of that so that we can de-risk the acreage, and we wanted to have completed that by the 31st of July 2012, and unfortunately we did not, and those negotiations are still in progress to attempt to farm out some of the acreage in Equatorial Guinea. If we look at the status in that case of the PetroSA's current BE status, I think what's important to note is that as a state-owned entity, we don't get any recognition for equity ownership. So even though we are owned by the state, in terms of the equity ownership, it's not applicable to ourselves. So where we are measured on management and control, employment equity, skills development, preferential procurement, enterprise development, socio-economic development, and then we come to our contribution level. Management and control, I think we've achieved. We're happy with that. There's still more work that we can do, but we have achieved our target. With regards to employment equity, we have targeted that we should be at 15. And what has happened is that we did try throughout the year to give preference to women for every recruitment cycle and employment of people living with disabilities. We've put in measures like offering bursaries and training, forming partnerships with institutions. With regards to the people living with disabilities, we formed a partnership with the National Council for Persons with Physical Disabilities in South Africa to assist us to be able to have an impact on the number of people with disabilities that we'd like to employ, because as I earlier said, we didn't meet our targets. We only managed to get 1% as opposed to the 3% we had targeted. So we've put in measures so that we can move that number to the 15. It's currently sitting at 8.48, and we would very much, using these interventions that we put in place, hope that by when we come back to committee next year, we will have been able to move that quite significantly. I'm confident that is what is going to happen, because I can see already as we sit here, this is 2013, I suppose, end of 31st of March, but as I sit here, there is evidence that we are starting to have an impact, and I'm sure by the time we come back next year, that will be looking much better. Skills development, I think I mentioned earlier that we are putting a lot of emphasis on skills development in the company. Still, our target is 20. We're doing a lot of leadership development. Members will know that we do have a center of excellence. Which center of excellence prepares artisans not only for PetroSA, but also for any company in the country is able to recruit from our center of excellence. We're also very particular in terms of the bursaries and who we give the bursaries to, how we give our bursaries to, so that we're able to impact on the rare skills that are required in this country and also for PetroSA. I'm sure members will know that PetroSA is probably currently the one of the only company drilling offshore in the manner that we really. Yes, there's been a lot of licenses that have been provided, but nobody is doing the type of work that we do. So we do require quite a rare skill. This is offshore drilling, and it's really not it's more complicated than onshore drilling, and the type of skills required are quite special. In terms of preferential procurement, we targeted 20, and we are at 19.27. So we do believe that we have not achieved our target. We're very, as I said, stringent about this. And the reason also why we need to make a point to ourselves that we've not achieved it is that our previous results was at 20. So in fact, we're going south, and that's not the way we should be going. In terms of enterprise development, we are not doing well at all with enterprise development. Earlier on, there was mention about the fact that there could be assistance that we could get in terms of how we can improve our enterprise development efforts. And I think for a state-owned entity like ourselves, it's not a good place to be sitting where your target is 15 and your current results are 2.9. Fact be told, there has been an increase since last year, but really we should be sitting in double-digit statistics rather than single digits. We do have the strategy, as I said, and we have also put in people to be able to concentrate on the execution of strategy. Socioeconomic development, we targeted to be at 15. Previous result was at 15, but we are now at 14.14. Again, we have it's gone south, and therefore we're stringently saying it has not been achieved, and therefore we need to put a lot of effort on how to improve our socio-economic development efforts in and around where we operate, but also being a national oil company, it must also stretch to the rest of the country. So in terms of the contribution level, we there, in summary, come out as a contribution level 3. Chair, I thought that we need to, because of the some of the results that we have and what's going to be shared very soon in the in our financials, I thought that it would be important in this committee to talk about Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. The regulation that we have stipulates that an organ of state must determine and stipulate the preference point system to be utilized in its evaluation and adjudication of tender process. And it stipulates that where a local entity has tendered, points must be awarded to the tenderer recognizing their BBB status, and this is up to a maximum of 10 points. The manner in which we procure hydrocarbons is through a tender process, which is governed, therefore, by the triple PFA, which does require that you've got to have a 90% price-based and a 10% triple BEE status scoring method. I'd like to also state here, members will know, that Petro SA operates in a regulated pricing environment, which is characterized by low margins, which can be further compounded by the payment of premiums. So, in the year that we're talking about under review, or prior to the year under review, in 2011, we applied for and were granted exemption from complying with the triple PFA, for a year. We had applied for this to be much longer, but what we were granted was a year. So this exemption then expired in December 2012. Discussions have been and are currently underway so that we can get exemption from the Finance Ministry. Now, probably the question that's being asked is, why would you want to be exempted as a state or entity? And it's because of the reason that I had started with, to say that in terms of the scoring, the 90-10 principle sometimes becomes prejudicial to the decision. So in the year under review, we bought hydrocarbon purchases which were valued at about 4.1 billion, of which 1.7 billion were made from the BBB entities. So in total, we did 54 transactions which were concluded, of which three of those 54, which total 605 million, were non-compliant to the triple PFA. And that is an issue which is mentioned in our financial, to the sense that we are non-compliant to an act, and we're trying here to give emphasis and understanding as to how that non-compliance comes about. We have now applied, and we have applied for the exemption, and we continue to engage. But for as long as those conditions remain the same, i.e. we are operating low margins, we need to go out for the tender, we need to be open and transparent in our tender methodology, we are always under the possibility that we need to make decisions about should we actually, in being compliant, what commercial impact does it have, and if it doesn't have if it has, then we need to take a decision and proceed having known that we've taken that decision. So just in case, Chair, if we come back next year and we say these are the decisions we've taken and this has been the impact, the understanding of our compliance, because we have decided we must comply and continue to comply with the triple PFA and deal with the consequences of that compliance as we go along. So I think we might come back and have to report next year how is it that we've managed to overcome that challenge that we have. Chair, just very briefly, I will hand over to the CFO on financial performance, but I would like to just talk to the income statement slide in line with what I had been saying earlier. As I mentioned, we had an increase in revenue from the 14 to 19 billion, just some highlights. This is mainly due to the fact that we had a weaker rand-dollar exchange rate, but also significantly we had a contribution, a very good contribution from our assets in Ghana in terms of the revenue and in terms of the net profit from that asset. Maybe to put it in better words, to say pretty close to about 30% of our revenue, no, not 30%, pretty close to, I'll leave that to the finance CFO, but it's quite a significant amount of revenue that we are getting from our asset in Ghana. I also wanted to talk here about the fact that because of the fact that we are not only selling products from our gas to liquid plant, the gas that we put through our plant comes at a very cheap price to us, and because it's ours in terms of the throughput, it is obviously much cheaper than us having to go out and import product. And that is why, if you look at the cost of sales, we have a higher cost of sales because of the fact that we are importing diesel and petrol into the country, and therefore if you compare those margins that you gain and compare them to margins that you would have made if only you run the plant and sell only your 48,000 barrels, those margins are very, very much smaller than your GTL throughput margins. As a result, it has impacted on our gross profit percentage. So last year or the year before, we had a 17%. And this year, our gross profit percent is only 11%. Chair, I also wanted to draw attention to the members to another thing. If we look at the investment income, that's the income that we get from money that we have in the bank. Over the years, as we have operated, the money has been in the bank, and we did not take that money and reuse it to plow it into projects. So the interest income, 732 million that we're talking about there, coming from the money that's in the bank. What we have done now, as the Chair had mentioned earlier, is that we are now embarking on utilizing that cash to be more efficient by putting it into investments and putting it into projects which are going to grow the company. As stated earlier, if we continue in the same vein and do nothing, we will actually go into demise mode. So therefore, we cannot sit and do nothing. We must have the growth project that we spoke about, and these are the projects, one, to sustain us, which is the drilling program of Ikwezi, but also we need to grow the company. The company in its present state, as it was first conceived 20 years ago, 10 years ago, is at a mature level. So normally companies, when they reach the mature level's chair, they start to slide into demise. So at that point, and before you get into that stage, you need to up the game and have a growth trajectory, which is what we are doing. Now, the implication, and I just want to make the point here, is that as we start to use the cash in the bank, it starts to impact on your interest income. Now, we're not proud of the fact that a lot of money that we have only comes from income. That's not, we don't want to continue that trend. Hence, we must embark, we are embarking on different projects using that cash. But the other side, as I'm trying to explain, is that you find that because your cash levels are dwindling, it means your interest income is also dwindling, and which means that your profit before taxation eventually is also dwindling. That is a graph that is going to be going further south unless we do something about it. And that's all I wanted to point out here, Chair, that it is imperative that we proceed and continue with the growth projects that we've embarked on, because we cannot, as a state-owned entity and as responsible business people, allow a situation where we can see where the future is going and we just sit and hope for the best and hope something falls from the sky. That is why we are busy with all the projects that we're busy with, because there is a great potential and a great future for PetroSA as a company, and we have been tasked to actually move into that direction. Chair, I won't say any more. I'll ask the CFO just to do some of the detail. But I wanted to note here, last year you note our profit for the year, 1.2 billion. This year, profit for the year, 583. We continue doing nothing. That number next year will be even less. The year after that, even less, and we cannot actually afford that. We need to embark on projects, downstream entry, equity, and LNG, and everything that is going to take the company and grow it into that company that I'm sure every South African wants to be proud of. CFO.
Thank you, CEO. Chairman, honorable members, colleagues, good afternoon. I'll present the financial results of the entity for the period ended March 31, 2013. If we look at the income statement, we made a profit of 593 million rand compared to last year or the previous period, 1.281 billion rand. Question is, how did that arise? Starting from the top, our revenue was 19.6 billion rand compared to last year's 14.4 billion rand. That came about as a result of the weaker rand, which resulted in higher revenue, but also the contribution from SEBA. SEBA's revenue in the 19 billion rand is 483 million rand. Our cost of sales for the period was 17.4 billion rand compared to the previous period's 11.9 billion rand. And this was a result of the increased sale of precious products, which is our trading activities, which we know the margins are lower than what we would get from the normal business in Motor Bay, for example. Just to give a highlight, the profit that we got from SEBA was 232 million rand from the revenue of 483 million rand. And that constitutes a return on sales of 48%. Normally for Motor Bay, we would get a return on sales of 23%. But because of the lower margins that we get from the trading business, those very same returns were diluted down to 11% compared to the previous period, 17%. So that's an indication of the changing business mode that we are experiencing, Chair. So our gross profit for the period, 11% compared to last year, 17%. If you look at other operating income, we had 384 million rand other operating income compared to the previous period, 80 million rand. This was a result of the write back of the cost of the assets that we purchased out of one of our joint venture partners in Block 9. This asset was concluded partly during the year, and at conclusion of that agreement, we had to write back the cost that we had incurred thus far on that joint venture situation. So that was brought back in to the tune of 254 million rand, which we classified as other operating income. If we look at other operating expenses, 1.958 billion rand compared to last year's 1.675 billion rand. the major component there that resulted in that adverse movement was the rushdown or the mothballing of the plant that we have in Mosso Bay, which is no longer being used and therefore had to be impaired to the tune of 3 million rand. Chair, honorable members, the profit that we made from our operations was therefore 604 million rand compared to the previous period, 908 million rand. I think the CEO has touched on the investment income that we got of 732 versus 840 million rand. You will see down the line that our cash is coming down, and because our cash is coming down, the return from that cash, the interest that we are earning from that cash, is therefore accordingly also plummeting. And in this period, it was 732 million rand compared to the previous period of 840 million rand. Our finance costs for the period were 816 million rand compared to the previous period of 466 million rand. And the reason therefore was, one, we acquired Zeba, which comes with its own baggage of abandonment costs that need to be accounted for. But we also took on loans from that very same asset, and the interest thereon on that asset are also included in the 816 million rand. We also include in there some revaluation aspects of the after loan that we took out on Zeba, and that loan is a dollar-denominated loan, and therefore, from an accounting perspective, when we restate that loan in dollar terms and restate that into rand, there's a charge that it comes through the income statement. So here, that results in our profit for the year being 593 million rand compared to the previous period, 1.3 billion rand. 1.28 billion rand, yes. If we look at the statement of assets and liabilities for the period, which is our consolidated balance sheet, we see that our total assets have gone from 26,487 million rand, 26,487 million rand, to 34,233 million rand. We had a budget of 8,869 billion rand, and I'll just explain the differences or the movements that took place during the period. Our property, plant and equipment went up on budget, again due to the acquisition of Zeba during the period. Our cash that we had at year end is 7.44 billion rand compared to the previous period, 4.8 billion rand. Again, that is courtesy of the asset that we purchased and the capital expenditure that we incurred on Ikwezi. In the budget, you will see that we had 57 million rand cash balance. The assumption in our budget was that we would have acquired the Belgium entry, which did not materialize during the period under consideration. And that's the reason that we do have a bit more cash than we budgeted for. If you look at the left-hand side of the balance sheet, the main issue that we can look at is short-term loans that we raised in respect of the separate asset of 2.037 billion rand, as well as the increase in our non-current provisions from last year's 6.92 billion rand to 8.398 billion rand, and the reason for that is indeed the SEBA assets that we have now brought onto our books, which comes, as we said earlier, with its own allocation of costs that need to be incurred in respect of the agriculture down the line as and when those fuels are abandoned. Chair, if we look at cash flow income statement, the business during the period under review generated total cash of 3.139 billion rand compared to the previous year's cash consumption of 103 billion rand. Although we made a lower profit than the previous period, the business actually did generate a lot more cash than we did in the previous period. We did receive interest of 732 million rand, we have alluded to already. And our acquisitions during the period were 7.22 billion rand. We had other investing activities which would relate to the project equity expenses that we had in respect of that particular asset. We also raised loans in terms of the acquisition of Zeba, but at the time that we acquired assets, we had to pay some of the loans that were sitting in that asset to the tune of 1.3 billion rand. So, Chair, from a capital point of view, our cash that we had of 4.849 billion rand is now whittled down to 744 billion rand. And part of that, as we saw, is now being converted into assets that are now generating some of the returns that we spoke about in the income statement. Chair, I will go through the outcomes of the external audit, and I may refer the member to pages 72 to 74 of the annual glossary. So what I'm going through is a hell of a summary of what the AG's outcomes were related to the audit that they undertook during the period. The third point is that the group was issued with an unqualified audit opinion. However, an impact of matter which does not necessarily modify the opinion was raised for the following items. Under significant items, the company disclosed certain fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well as irregular expenditure, which were incurred during the financial period under review. Some of the investigations are either still in the process of being finalized and or previous recommendations are still being implemented, and further fruitless and wasteful expenditure and or irregular expenditure may still require further disclosure in subsequent periods, depending on the outcome of the investigations as they are implemented. There were material impairments to the SA Equatorial Guinea loan account in the 2013 financial period, which amounted to 186.4 million rand. This was interest on the loan that has been granted or given to the subsidiary by the mother company, by the SA holding company. And that 186.4 million rand was incurred during the period under consideration. Under other legal and regulatory requirements, there were no material findings on predetermined objectives concerning usefulness and reliability of the information. There were certain material misstatements in the performance of the objectives report, which were identified during the period, and all of these were corrected by management. Under achievement of grant targets, 33% of total grant targets were not achieved during the year under review. And with annual financial statements, they were submitted for auditing. Certain aspects were not prepared in all material aspects in accordance with the prescribed reporting framework as required by PFMA and Companies Act. And that the material statements of revenue identified by the auditors were subsequently reported and corrected in the results that we have shared with you, Chair. On the audit committee, contravention of the Companies Act in that there was a contravention of the Companies Act in that an audit committee member that served during the current financial period had also been involved in the day-to-day management of the company's business. And under expenditure management, steps were not taken to effectively prevent fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure. And the total of fruitless and wasteful expenditure was incurred of 31 million rand with an irregular expenditure of 866 million rand, details of which will follow in our presentation. On the environment, there was a contravention of the National Environmental Management Act since timely corrective action was not implemented with regards to the contamination at the operating facilities. Then under procurement and contract management, certain goods and services were not procured through a procurement process which is a fair, equitable, transparent, and competitive as required by the TFMA. And contracts were awarded to bidders based on preference points that were not allocated in accordance with the requirements of the preferential procurement policy framework. I think the CEO is also touched on that. In other reports, coming out of the AG's report, an investigation mandated by the Board Audit and Risk Committee into possible irregularities relating to procurement policy was completed, and recommendations from these investigations are in the process of being evaluated and implemented by those who are charged with governance. In the same light, an investigation mandated by the previous Honorable Minister of Energy, Mrs. Peters, into all significant procurement of goods and services that are not considered to relate to the GTO operations of the PetroSA are still in progress. Chair, from a numerical viewpoint, I mentioned that a total of Fruitcake and Westlake expenditure of 31.347 million rand was incurred for the period under review. If you look at the previous period, we incurred 35.837 million rand, of which 16.395 million rand was recovered during the period under review, leaving therefore a total Fruitcake and Westlake expenditure amount of 19.442 billion rand. If you go into the detail further of irregular transactions, this has been split into two: contravention of company policy, 260.930 million rand, and contravention of legislation, 605 million rand. Total 865.930 million rand compared to the previous period, 27.387 million rand. And the 605 is relating to the triple PFA amount that the CEO alluded to earlier on. If you look at the breakdown of the 260 million rand on the the 260 million rand is unpacked in the following slide 31. There was an appointment that was not made in terms of our tender and procurement procedures, and that amounted to 16.6 million rand. This was a transactional advisor that had been appointed in the previous period. So the same amount, the same transactional advisor then put us into the current financial year, amounting to 16.6 million rand. Then there was a contract which was approved by the project procurement committee, amounting to 241 million rand. The threshold for ESCO approval is 200 million rand. So this amount needed to have gone to the board for approval. And this amount was a foreign currency denominated amount. And on conversion and upon payment of that amount, the amount reached the 200 million rand number. And hence it had to be approved by the board. Then in terms of government gift, the certain amounts that were pertaining to the previous period, which should have thrown into the current period, in terms of that investment that I alluded to, and that amount was 200,000 rand, which again fell under the realm of irregular expenditure. The current land consulting and price quotas amount of 3.1 million rand was incurred in the prior year, and incurred for expenditure in the current financial year, and that same amount had to then be deemed to be irregular under the our procurement processes. And the total amount, therefore, in terms of contravention of company policy amounted to 260 million rand, 900,000 rand, Chair. Chair, honorable members, I will end here, and I will revert to our CEO to give the concluding remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, honorable members, it will be important to, before I go into the concluding remarks, just to touch on some of the things that were mentioned in the audit opinion. So much as we had an unqualified audit opinion, we had those matters of emphasis. Which matters of emphasis, some of them referred to the investigation and some of the results of the investigation. I'd like to state, Chair, if I may, that with regards to the investigation that was requested by the Board Audit Committee and the Board of PetroSA, just to remind the members that the inception of that investigation had come about from the internal control system of PetroSA, where we, due to the compliance report that has to be written on a quarterly basis, some of those transactions were deemed to be non-compliant as a result of us having to sign off all the managers and, I mean, all the senior executives on a quarterly basis, sign off a compliance report to say, in my area, everything has been compliant, save for the flowing. And that was the inception of those transactions. that were found. They further went a bit further, and then the board decided to request an audit review of those transactions. I would like to be, why I'm stating this, Chair, is because we're rather proud of our ISO status and the processes that we have in the company that are recognized by ISO as being robust processes. Thereafter, the investigation was done, and there was a lot of involvement from a governance perspective of our board, to whom we are thankful, and eventually recommendations were made, and those recommendations, Chair, are being carried out, and that's what our chairman had referred to earlier, that we are in the process of implementing some of those recommendations. Companies that were appointed, found to have been appointed regularly, those contracts have been cancelled. Individuals that were involved in those processes are being dealt with internally from a disciplinary perspective and externally in other ways. So action has been taken on the recommendations of those of that report, and as has been alluded to earlier, it's still work in progress. Also, Chair, I'd like to perhaps state that it has been stated a little bit earlier that we didn't achieve 33% of our objectives. Yes, it is true. On the contrary, it's about, you know, a full glass or an empty glass. How is your glass half full or half empty? We did manage through this tumultuous time and very difficult time to have achieved 67% of the objectives that had been set for ourselves. So in summary, Chair, the organization continues in its mandate as an NOC to support the security of supply, continues to transform itself so that we can become the national oil company of South Africa and become a player worth in the market in South Africa, to be able, therefore, to deliver on our managed security of supply and transformation. So 2012-2013, Chair, in terms of the numbers, was a profitable year, but the operating conditions were tough. They remain tough, Chair, because that sector of the diminishing feedstock has not disappeared. And for such time that we are able to bring in alternate sources of income for that company, we will keep crying to the committee to say we have this diminishing feedstock. We don't want to do that. When we come back next year, we want to be reporting on how we have changed and taken a turnaround, because the whole of our group, as had been alluded to by our chairman, is under reconstruction. The favorite the favorite phrase that our chairman uses is that we are in flight and we're busy trying to fix the engine. We're an aeroplane in flight and we're busy trying to fix the engine. That's exactly what we're doing. We are in flight, we're flying upwards, and we're trying to fix the engine as we are in flight. Our focus, Chair, it's very much, we have a great asset in Mossel Bay. That plant was the first gas-to-liquid plant in the world. And for 17 years, it was the biggest liquid gas-to-liquid plant in the world, until the others came along. So what we are focusing on doing is sustaining the plant in Mossel Bay, our gas-to-liquid plant. We have a very good set of extremely specialized people working there, world-class, and we want to continue to focus on sustaining that. We're focusing on the gas supply challenge and how we can bring in our alternative feedstock, and we will use this as a platform for growth. We are tightening our financial and operational performance and controls so that we can move from not only achieving 67% of our objectives, but to be able to move to becoming a company that has performed at 100% in terms of the objectives. We're tightening the controls, we're tightening our cost management. And in terms of our Vision 2020 strategy, growth strategy, which is the strategic objective, it is going to advance enterprise development. Through it, we'll be able to advance job creation. Through it, we are going to be able to undertake other transformation initiatives. So yes, we've had a difficult year, but the resolve is there. We understand exactly what it is that we need to do. We understand exactly what it is that we have to do, how we have to do it to grow this company into a national oil company and be able to be fully integrated and commercially competitive by 2020. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Nasir. I see here there's also the Audit and Risk Committee angle. I'm sure Bob Shatwari would be keen to go through the rendition.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much for that opportunity. Chair, the Risk and Audit Committee operates as one. We operated together because it made sense at some point to actually operate it as a combined committee, though we might have to change it sometime down the line. One of the things that I need to report to the committee here is that the Audit and Risk Committee is a committee of the board, as appointed by the board itself, where the members, we only have three members of the audit committee, the ones who are sitting next to me on the other side of Mr. Mwango and next on my left. And all three of the members are non-executive directors of the board. And then they've got various skills and qualifications that we have, which are all not less than a master's degree. And Chair, we operate using the term of reference of the Audit and Risk Committee, which is normally approved once a year. And the terms of reference themselves are the ones that are actually driving the agenda of the activities of the committee. And then you will note, Chair, that these terms of reference, they describe the roles and responsibilities of the committee, the composition and its operational guidelines of how we're supposed to be operating as a committee. And then also, Chair, that at the end of the financial year, as of 31st March 2013, we have reported in the annual report, as you see, that we have complied as a committee with the Companies Act of 2008, the PFMA, and the King 3, except on the integrated reporting section. And Chair, if we move on to the duties and responsibilities from the committee, you will find that the members are elected by the shareholder at an AGM. Actually, they were reconfirmed on Monday this week by the minister, by CAF and with the minister being present. And then the BEC has an independent role with its accountability to the board and also to the shareholders. The collective skills of the BEC the skills are appropriate to fulfill the oversight role, which is actually placed upon the committee. Now, the BEC, as I just mentioned in the oversight direction, is that it has an oversight responsibility in respect of various areas, which, amongst others, include the finance, combined assurance, the internal audit risk management, inter-external audit, and the compliance. Now, on the same oversight that we're talking about and the responsibility there too, some of the items that are included would include the effectiveness of the internal control systems, which we look at quite closely, and then the effectiveness of the internal audit department, which we also have to evaluate, the external audit process and the appointment and confirmation there too, which we come back and report and reconfirm at the AGM, and then the risk areas of the company and the company's operations. And then, Chair, there's a presentation that is actually on the screen. And there's also some copies that I'll make available to the members who are here for you to actually see. Some of the areas of responsibility include integrity and the quality of financial information, which we look at on quarterly and then on annual basis. And then the accounting and auditing concerns, which are also all identified during the audits, and they are then subsequently managed and monitored and then reported upon as and when they get corrected. There's also the compliance, which we look at, the compliance with the applicable laws, regulations and policies and procedures. You would have heard that the CEO would have spoken about the social and ethics committee, which is starting recently now. So that's quite a lot of the regulation side will actually go to that particular committee. But from the audit committee and risk committee, we actually look at those, the compliance there to make sure that it happens. And then there's the last two will be the expertise and resources and experience of the finance function, which is something that we actually look at. We consider that and see. You'll actually note as well that the financial director of the company, as we speak now, is an acting financial director and the GSLC or CFO, acting CFO. And then we have just appointed a lady who will be starting on the 1st of November as the CFO
going forward. And then the last part is the corrective actions that are taken by management to address the internal and external audit findings. We actually monitor that and make sure that it's reported upon to see that we're continuing correctly and we don't go on the wrong side of what the AG and the internal audit has reported. If we move on to the meeting side, Chair, the compliance plan of the committee drives the nature of the agenda of the frequency of meetings. As I said earlier, that this year we've had about 5 meetings, and from time to time you'll see that we might need to have another meeting depending on the needs of the business. We will then schedule it such that we can actually concentrate on it and make it happen, not to hinder the progress of the business, but to ensure that we actually help facilitate the progress there too. The meetings, all meetings, we hold them only if we call it. 2 members at least must be present at the meeting because there's 3 appointed members. And then if you look at the examples of the matters that are discussed and resolved at each back meeting, they include quite a few items which, amongst others, include approval of strategic and annual internal audit and compliance plans. We also look at the review and the approval of annual financial statements. And then we take those to the board for final approval, and then the meetings where we meet privately with the Office of Auditor General, we also meet with the internal auditor, the chief internal auditor. For some reason, in the company we still call her chief internal auditor, but when you look at the Institute of Internal Auditors requirements, it says that for compliance. We need to relook at those titles and make them as chief audit executives because it's a finding as we speak on the moment and something that will have to be addressed as we go forward. And then there's a review of reports and issued by the assurance providers, and we check the those items, and then we make sure that corrective measures are taken into account and dealt with. And then there's approval of the group combined assurance plan, which we'll look at from time to time. Then the last 4 will include the recommendation of the quarterly financial reports, which we then also present to the board for final approval before submission to the shareholder. And the summoning respective executive managers to the specific meetings to discuss specific identified items where they can give us the further details as we require to make sure that we are clear in our oversight role. And the last 2, which amongst others items that we deal with in the back, will include the performing special investigations requested by the board. And you have heard that there is reporting, reported investigations that CEO has been speaking about now, which is part of the work that we have to look at and make sure that we decide upon, because quite a lot of the issues that come through from that would be coming to influence the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and some of the irregular expenditure. So the internal audit, the audit and review committee is quite critical in making sure that we get involved and understanding what that is. And then the audit charter we have to look at. In conclusion, Chair, I would say that the control environment is functionally there. It exists. I would say that it's not broken, if I may use that word quite loosely. And we have obviously identified some inconsistencies that have happened through the last financial year, which are being investigated, some of them, and some of them have been corrected already. And then we're looking for stronger enhancements going forward. And there's, as the previous chair from SEF mentioned, there's some greater alignment that we are working upon between the subsidiaries at the holding company level, itself at the SEF level and the PetroSA level, and then that actually will go down to the other subsidiaries of PetroSA. So we're looking to actually make sure that we streamline and strengthen that to make sure that we can work together as a whole. And then a couple of control breaches, as mentioned, have happened during the year and were identified and being investigated and reported upon. And that shows that the controls are there, because from the controls some of the deviations were identified and noted. We have therefore of the opinion that the control environment as it sits right now is operational, and we feel that it will be enhanced going forward and obviously following the review which was done through the Internal Audit Institute of Internal Auditors, that the controls are satisfactory. We also have the opinion that the controls are there and they're functional, and we can only do better. from here. We can't go backwards. We've got to make sure that we get our grips on everything and we operationalize the application of the controls within the organization so that as we continue going forward, that the business is not exposed to further losses going forward. I'll leave it at that, Chair, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sizo and your team. Quite a mouthful. But from the onset, when I saw your presentation, I thought it was going to have quite a load, given that there have been quite a number of unfortunate incidents in Petro SA. You put it mildly, honorable members. There is a reason why in terms of the budget review process that the Auditor General Office has introduced this practice of saying, let us engage with audit committees or audit and risk committees separately. Let us bring that here to make the presentations independently without fear or favor. Now, you simply described what you had done. Some of the things you highlighted, you just did them verbally. I trust and hope in future at least they're in writing, because we're going to follow up these matters. Yes, we do appreciate that PetroSA, under the leadership of SEF, has done best to uncover a couple of nasty issues. Some are still forthcoming, waiting for the reports. Certainly, the minister's investigation need to be combined with the SEF team's thing, fine. But even there, we would like to hear what the audit committee says. The first point is the internal audit, is it? Which is one of the direct links or the tools that audit committee uses to engage with any company. It's not just SEF, it's not just PetroSA. Because they then check on things, now, albeit rather reactive. They check with internal audit. What is happening? Why didn't you pick this up? Did you raise this matter with? Because the internal audit can even go to a divisional departmental manager. They are there to say there's an early warning system. At least I can say that profit authority, because in my previous world I was chaired an audit committee. So, this is fine, but from the committee side there was more expectation. Be robust. And please, the future, live up to the expectations of not only this committee, but of the Parliament, because I'm here on behalf of Parliament. I don't say you just get a microscope and be a Hitchcock who looks for things that don't even exist, but where things have been identified, be firm and open about them. Because it would have been helpful for us to have said, look, we are satisfied that PetroSA, under the leadership of SEF and the offices of the department, did its best to uncover all those irregularities and wasteful expenditures. Those are big monies. This is a big company, and those are big monies. I want to repeat that. It's an indication. Look, I think also on the other hand, even before I became a member of Parliament or became a part of the Energy Committee, things were coming out to the papers about PetroSA. So one of the things I had as an expectation when I assumed the chair of this committee was that I would like to see how PetroSA, under the leadership of staff, not even rushing to the department, how they're cleaning up, all the mess. They are trying their best, we can see, but we want the audit committee independently. Sorry to take this time, honourable members, independent, to say, yes, we've been watchful, we feel that they're getting there. Why? You must be factual, cold facts, because of 1, 2, 3. You see? Independently, as if they're not even in the room for that matter, I want that to highlight. And honourable members, I think we have time, or for those who will be coming back, except honourable Khadija, who already knows that he's coming back. we need to be doing that even to other subsidiaries as well in future, once we feel uneasy about a certain area. Of course, I'm saying this, admiring what you're saying. Of course, also what I pick up is, if you shake your head or not, what I'm saying to being up is that it is through the strength of your systems, policies and procedures, that we're able to uncover these irregularities. In fact, this fraud and corruption, let me plan and tell about it. The systems were working. And what you can do, you can only tighten them. And you put this way there. Sure, this is a good model, which you will expand and extend to other subsidiaries. Because, should self, or not even should say, yeah. When self, not should, when self gets fully restructured and blossoms, there will still be corrupt people. But it must be the system that keeps on exposing them all the time. So you're not shaking your head, which means I'm right. No, I want to be clear about that, because there is a difference in us uncovering fraud and corruption through a whistleblower. Isn't it? One of the members. It's because I see it happening. I didn't need the system, but I saw the person doing this. Whereas if you see the system, it gives confidence to any institution, whether it's a private company or a government, an institution that is tight enough. Of course, it's a reactive environment because it gets discovered down the line. Whilst we would have loved to have it as a more of an early warning or a preemptive, exercise more than anything. I just wanted to emphasize on that. Of course, indicating to Pedro S.A. that, of course, there is this very unfortunate situation. I trust and hope this serves as a lesson. And I'm sure from the committee's side, we can only say that, yes, we do meter out some level of confidence on what we've done, but also it will only serve to strengthen our alertness. Because us, we'd like to roll out and improve and grow, diversify, but at the same time, the history will still be very fresh in our minds that you unfortunately went through some of these, activities. Of course, one also takes into account that you've already taken action at all levels, hopefully, and of course that should be linked to what you do with those who are left behind, because it's not a matter of just acting of those who have engaged in those misdeeds. It's how you strengthen and also re-socialize those who are left behind to ensure that you don't spend any extra minutes now running around, behind the act of corruption and fraud. Remember, you're wasting time. Unfortunately, it's not we've got it to you, but, essentially you're wasting time because you should have been looking at how you are strengthening your exploration with other companies, getting more gas and getting more oil and whatever. But now you've got to chase people who have just squandered money of petrol. I want to be very, very upfront about that. So you need to also just pull in the whole stuff and tell them that please do your best. Don't let us make waste time, because the better Petrobras is, the more you can also negotiate for better wages, because we're wasting time instead of looking after you and your welfare. It's an unfortunate situation, but they couldn't avoid it. I remember I've said, I'll add a few things after you. The floor is yours. Fine. Yes, Honorable Kweli.
It's online. Okay. Great. Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. There's a number of issues I just want to raise, because obviously this is a very important entity. And I must say, I mean, it is good to hear your ambitions and to hear that you are aggressive about your plans of the future of PetroSA and that you want to turn it into leading national oil company of South Africa. And I think that ambition should be lauded, but of course, the whole time we need to look at this from a step back. I understand that you have the interests of PetroSA at heart, but I mean, we have to have the interests of the country as a whole at heart and to make sure that these actually all fit up. And so, you know, the issue is that have we, you know, do we have the ability to in fact take over 25% of the market in South Africa, and is that an advisable kind of approach for South Africa in the long term? I mean, these are the issues we have to really deal with kind of on a philosophical level. And related to that, you know, I mean, some of the investments that you have made globally haven't been the best, and I keep coming back to those, you know, things around like the Egypt deal and the Equatorial Guinea deal. And so clearly, I mean, to be a player in this field, one has to be able to compete with some very, very powerful national oil companies, and it's very difficult. So I know that you have reorientated your focus likely, that you aren't doing the deep exploration that you used to do, and you are taking smaller shares in exploration because it's far too risky, and I think that is the right approach. But I do think that where your focus should be predominantly is on the gas. I mean, I think that gas is the what you know. As you say, you had the largest gas-to-liquid plant in the world for a number of years. It's with this technology, and you desperately need gas as a feedstock to continue your success. So, I mean, my advice, I mean, whether you want to take it or not, is to say, you know, focus predominantly on the kind of gas sector, and let's see how we can utilize that to build up a gas economy in South Africa as well. And given that, though, I mean, what I do find surprising is that we tend to focus on West Africa in your kind of exploration drive and in your kind of ambitions. Whereas, in fact, you know, I think we really should be looking far more at Southern Africa, specifically at Mozambique and Tanzania and also in Namibia, where a lot of the big gas finds have been made. Now, just to be interested, I have read the annual report, and I do see that you are involved with Mozambique in terms of setting up a gas to liquid. But where are we in terms of trying to secure contracts to secure some of the gas that they've found, particularly in the north of Mozambique and in the south of Tanzania? Where are we in terms of that? Because that's really the space where I think you should be playing, and I'm not seeing enough of that. So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say there. Then the issue of Sable Oil, I mean, that, of course, hit the headlines last year, and there were a number of issues around that. Some of them was about how the deal was concluded and who got paid and things like that. So, I mean, you can try and highlight some of those issues and whether those have all been resolved and where we sit in terms of those kind of controversies. But I think ultimately what we have to decide with Sable Oil is, I see that it is starting to produce money now. But is it what, I mean, from your vantage point, and you'll probably say yes, but do you think that this has been a good investment in terms of the money that we've paid for those shares? And do you think that this will produce returns that will justify the kind of investment that we made into Sable? And I'd like to hear some of your rationale behind this. You know, give us some sense of why you think that was a good investment, if you do. I see you also mentioned that for some of your further activities, some of your ambitious plan, you might need government guarantees. Are you talking about guarantees from the Treasury to back up some of your investment plan? And if so, I mean, we're running very close to the edge in terms of government guarantees at the moment. I don't think that that's a feasible option, given the kind of guarantees that Eskom certainly needed to fund its expansion programs. So is that the case, and, you know, what is the situation with regard to that? And then, as I was saying, in terms of the gas economy, I mean, I'm happy to see that you've looked along with Eskom, and you mentioned in your annual report, at the kind of LNG infrastructure, either at Mossel Bay or, in fact, at Saldanha, you say, might also be another alternative. I mean, what I would like to see PetroSA in a sense come out with, and perhaps not just PetroSA, but a kind of, you know, and I just don't think the department's doing enough work on this, is a kind of infrastructure development that we would need to really get a gas economy going in South Africa. So what kind of LNG terminals are needed? What's the level of investment that will be needed, not just for your needs, but for the needs of both Eskom and possibly supplying it as future kind of energy generating or electricity generating turbines? And is that something that you're looking at? Is that something that's going to be beyond the scope of just your plants? What is the status with that? Because I really think that's something we need to look at there. And then I see in terms of Egypt and Ghana on page 72, they mention that there's material impairments in terms of the Petro Egypt loan and the Equatorial Guinea loan. If you could just elaborate a bit on what those material impairments are so that we can get that. And then also, of course, I mean, part of your ambitions, as you say, is to take 25% of the market in South Africa now. We know that you've now attempted a foray into the downstream market, and we've heard a lot about that in terms of the engine deal. Where are we sitting with that at the moment? What is your plans with regards to that? Are you still looking at acquiring a stake there? What is the situation, just so that you can give us some insight into that? And then in terms of the new MPRDA, I haven't followed it closely enough. I mean, I've certainly been watching some of that space. But I know there is a certain controversy over your role in the new MPRDA, and I don't know if you want to be able to comment on what it envisages for you, because I think there is an issue of you being both a player and referee in terms of that. And if you can speak to some of those issues, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sir Mayatula, isn't it? I'm not sure whether the people is not allowed not to ask any questions.
Actually, it's the opposite.
During the introductions, I had a lot of acting vice president, since everybody is acting. Well, where is the president?
I'm a
On page 8, the Mbizana project, I think that's a very exciting project. How I wish it could be taken to policy so that my people could benefit on that. I don't know how the long term.
I can even suggest the location. I know the rocks, I can step up my
hand. In your page 10, of your presentation, your slides. Please, yeah. Your pages are so small sometimes. Let me take you, let me replace that. Let me go to page 19. On page 19 of your slides, Petro SA was granted that exemption from complying for 1 year, which ended in 2012. It is now almost the end of 2018, but we're still negotiating the extension of that. I'm not sure what are the implications of that. Why did it take so long from understanding that we wanted that to be extended further? I take you to page 35. The CEO seems to me taking the 33% lightly, half full, half, while her own target was 100. I'm curious to get what is in that 33 that was not, and what is it that brought that about? What are the intentions to change that around? Allow me to take you to page 31. Well, what is frustrating during this time of the RRR going through these different organization is to find the repetition of some of things that you thought they were basic and understandable, not supposed to happen. Now, if you go to that page, for example, you look at those irregularities, one editor saying, well, why is it that it could be that something like that could happen? The abandon was not in terms of the tender procurement, and we're talking about 16 million. When you are seated, as I say, this repeats itself in many, some of the basics, especially when you have your internal auditors, you name them, all those things. You go to the next one. A contract was approved by the first procurement committee. The value of the contract falls outside. These are some of the basic things that we have thought are simple, which are not supposed to happen. Is it because there was an incentive for fraudulent activity? What size is it? To me, that's a general concern. Why is it that you have to repeat some things like that? Thank you.
Remember, Prof, one of the things I raised that, it's public notice, it was in the papers, that even before you and I came into this committee, there were very, very unsavory things that came out in the public, in the media, around Petrese, even before Osno season, and a couple of them were there. So I'm reinforcing your point that, you can respond, but we'd like to insist that very strongly, in your minds, not even at the back of your mind, in the front of your mind, but why is that there's a repetition of certain irregularities or fraudulent activities, or shifting it maybe from one area to another? That may be one of the things. Is that a lot of sophistication? Particularly even in the view of the fact that, as we say, the very system and policies have been able to cover, on the other side. Okay. It's not good.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. My colleagues have already asked questions. Mine is on page 11. The recruitment of women. I can see this is a very good thing. Must congratulate you for that, for having women, but then have a question again on it. You set yourself the target of 30, and you managed to get 39. All in all, how many women do you want to have in the company? And the other one, which I also want to say to you, Petro SA, is the one of job creation. I think that would be a very, very, very good thing as a country that we're fighting, we are crying, we don't know where to go to with job opportunities. Everybody's crying every day about jobs, jobs, jobs. So what you are doing, I think you should keep this up and make it a reality, not on paper. Thank you, Chairperson.
On my side, is that once again, Equatorial Guinea, because we're going to farm out and we want to make sure that the unfortunate situations that have happened are not repeated once again. Our guys picked up that there was a situation whereby 12 million and 12.4 million rand was in expenditure was incurred, which was incurred outside the levels of authority of one of the staff members. And this was condoned, but it's not clear what the man was incurred for. And we would like to have answers provided on this. Who condoned this misconduct? Because 12 million is a lot of money. Imagine the amount of empty houses or quota regulations can be put in here. And just how it has been brought to close this matter. Because he has got claims amounting to 263 million against it in a number of cases. If you could just take us through the nature of these claims and also how these claims are being resolved and not to be repeated. I think that's, let me see. I think the enterprise development issue, National Susan, you said something, but can you please have a second bite on it? In fact, I feel guilty, honored members, because I don't know why we missed it in the past. I mean, the figures are rather low. Share with us how robust are you going to be? Because remember, one of the strengths of enterprise development is indirect job creation. Because by developing other enterprises, you're actually triggering jobs downstream, if I can use that term, and big time too at times. Though you concede non-achievement on commercial industrial sales on gas, the interest to me is why, what do you see from your side? Not that I haven't picked up one or two things from the department on gas issues, but just let's hear from Pedro S.A. What's your take? Because, I mean, the committee is one of the structures that's very, very keen to see how team energy in its various forms grappling with the transforming the gas industry. So, I mean, on one side, it's admirable that you actually were taking up this side, but on the other side, it's unfortunate that you missed it, can't find, but why? Why do you think there are challenges? Another area which is very important, particularly that area and uncovering all of this, is staff morale. It's an internal matter, but the committee does have to get interested into how is the staff morale. You know, restructuring is change, and it triggers a lot of uneasiness. And at times, honestly, on members, just unknown fears. And it's very, very key to share with us what's your take on that. Another area is international. You haven't shared much with us. I mean, to us, yes, you do trade as part of international engagement, but are you telling us that when the department goes up and down to engage and share experiences in these various platforms as it did yesterday, that it is better to say or left behind? Don't you sometimes go along in some of these engagements, either on your own or the department, just to share experiences, peer engagement, and all of that? I'm sure that would be quite helpful. Forget me for this. I'm defending myself before I ask. If I read the finances correctly, taxation has increased but income has declined. I'm wondering how does that happen? If you could help on that. I think that's all for now. Babushetra, I saw your hand, but if you could allow us to see this, you know, to respond, and then you'll come in at the end. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. As the Chair allows, I'm going to deal with some of the answers broadly. Some of them I will just ask where there's a detail required. Like, for example, how many women do we have? What does that mean? What is our plan? I'll ask Tulsa to deal with that if it's possible.
What is Tulsa? I said demands a net disability.
Net disability. Okay, let's check. But Okay, if I can just deal with them in order of how they came. I think broadly there was a question to say, does PetroSA have the ability to take on this big growth trajectory? Shouldn't you be focusing on what you know, which is the gas sector, and then also just appraise us on where you are with Mozambique, which is a natural place you should be looking for gas, and talk about Sabre, was it a good investment, and what are you doing, what kind of terminals are you looking at in terms of the LNG issue? So those are sort of kind of interlinked because they're all talking about our growth plans. So, Chair, I think maybe importantly is to state that maybe I should start with a sentence that says, Nokia, there used to be a timber company before they started making cell phones. So they shifted from one thing completely into another thing.
And the boot for the Russian army.
Oh, and boot for the Russian So in our case, so I think in PetroSA's case, why are they trying to grow and become a bigger company and move from being a single source income company reliant on gas? We are talking about the hydrocarbons in one form or the other. So in at the refinery, we take in gas and then we make synthesis gas and then we refine it and we get diesel petrol and so on. And then we sell it on wholesale. What we don't have, I suppose, is the retail distribution network, and we don't have the secondary distribution, we don't have primary distribution. That's what we don't have. But in terms of the value chain of hydrocarbons, I think we have the knowledge. We might not have sufficient capacity to run such a big company, but I think there are ways and means of doing that type of thing. You usually can phase how you actually grow your company. You might not take it in one swell bite. You must phase your growth. And, of course, when it comes to capacity and skills, one, you train up your people, but two, you can acquire. Skills are things that you can acquire. Yes, we know that we're dealing in a world where everybody wants the skills, but I think there are ways and means of either turning into partnership. You can do a manner of different ways of actually being able to deal with your gap. So I'd like to state that it is a worry that we have in terms of how are we going to actually do this, and in terms of integration, our integration strategy and integration plan, we are going to be able to address that. So we take cognizance of the fact that we're taking, we're growing much bigger, but I think we must also agree that we are in the hydrocarbon business and we've been there for the past 20 years. And in terms of the gas sector, you're quite correct, Honourable. I nearly said comrade Honourable. I heard that earlier this morning, but maybe that's the new thing. I better get with it now. So in terms of the issue of the gas sector that we're good at, you're quite right. In fact, what I didn't, perhaps I didn't articulate myself properly. What I should have said is that in terms of this issue of the liquefied natural gas, what we're trying to do is actually position ourselves, because of that particular knowledge, to become a gas aggregator in the country. And to that extent, we are engaging with Eskom, who would be the biggest off-taker as we see it right now in terms of power generation. That would fit in very nicely with the plans in terms of changing the energy mix in the country. So we are guided by those principles and policies in the country in terms of changing the energy mix. And in any case, also there's also going to be the development of IPPs. And those IPPs, I mean, most of them are not going to be wanting to only rely on coal. They will be looking at other methods of power generation, and of course gas is your natural answer to that. The question is, what are you busy doing in Mozambique? I'm sure the honourable member will know that the fields in Mozambique that are currently producing or will be producing in 2018 are, by and large, have already been, what should I say, what's the word? Not even earmarked. They're already, yeah, they're sold. And the gas that's going to be coming from there has already been sold into the future and committed, as I thank you, Chair, has been committed into the future. What we can and what we've been trying to do is have discussions with our sister companies in those countries, because they would have a certain percentage of carry. And we're saying that we can partner with them in terms of that carry so that we can get access to gas. But you need to also remember something, that it's all about price. You know, at the end of the day, what's the commercial value to the other counterparty. Currently, your gas is selling into Japan at $17 per MMBTU. Now, for us, we would like to actually access that gas at much less than that. So the issue is, how do you negotiate to tell somebody, listen, forgo your couple of dollars per MMBTU because you and I are neighbors? So effectively, that's what needs to happen. There needs to be a meeting of the minds so we can strategically have a discussion and hopefully get some agreement. So those are some of the discussions that are going on with the last Mozambique. There was a sale of part of the asset up in the north, where one of the wasn't Anadarko, was it Anadarko? It was Anadarko. They were selling. But I tell you, when you start selling something that already has got proven reserves, the price that they wanted for those proven reserves was way, way beyond. I'm sure if we had come here, you'd have asked us, what were you guys thinking? So in short, we were approached, you know, and we had a first bite, because we are partners with Anadarko in other different places in Ghana and here as well, the south of coast of South Africa. But we couldn't actually take that any further. And it eventually sold for a total of $4 billion for the asset and $4 billion for the future plant, the export plant that has to be built. And a total $8 billion. We couldn't have bought it for 10% it was. So we do continue having discussions with them. Why do we think that... So this issue with Eskom, we've signed an agreement. It's there. It's not talk. Where we are going to look at working together in terms of bringing the LNG so that they can utilize it. Because you see, for us to bring it only for ourselves, it doesn't make sense. It's I mean, the cost is really prohibitive. So we needed to have other off-takers, Eskom being the biggest, and all others that will follow through as we go through. So that's really what it is. And I mean, the terminal, you spoke about the terminal. There are options. You can either build the terminal, which will cost you quite a bit of money, or you could lease it and have a floating terminal. We're looking at all those options to see what is it that's the best thing that we can do until such time that you've built your cash reserves or you've built your balance sheet to a point where you can now afford to actually borrow and build. So that's all in the project, and those are the things that we're looking at. Why do we think Saver Investment was a good investment? Was it money well spent? I was saying to my CFO now that every time he phones me and he says the Saver money is in, I mean, I really smile. My day changes because it's tinkling. I can hear it. It's fallen in. So we think that from an investment perspective, it was a good investment because of the fact that, one, we're already getting good revenues from it. In terms of its buyback period, I think it's got a positive, when he talks about it, a positive buyback period in terms of when we're going to be able to have paid off our loan. Secondly, it's paying for itself, in short, because of the fact that as we develop it, and it's going to develop further, we're going to be able to eke out more barrels out of it. But at the same time, the bank's prepared to walk the road with us because of the fact that it's got really good and robust NPVs going forward. So I think, yes, it was a good investment. You speak about the fact that there was all the stuff in the paper about it, and I think, you know, Chair has said we must be frontal about these things. Yes, there was stuff in the paper about it, and that unfortunately had marred the fact that this is a good asset. It is a good asset, and I think if you look at how many, some of the, in our what do you call it, the other oil companies internationally that keep, whenever they meet, we become somebody big all of a sudden, you know, because of this participation. When they meet and say, oh, Petrosay Jubilee, yeah, good, you know, they shake our hands and so on. So it's put us around the table as well with some of the big boys, and I think that's also another, what is it, but it's an intangible advantage that we also gained out of the asset, apart from the fact that financially it is a good asset. Then there was a question today, you know, you're talking about, we heard, the Honourable said, we saw something in the papers about a deal, give us the situation and something. Look, I think what comes in the papers we've got no control over, to be quite honest. And in all negotiations that we are doing with all the different companies, we have signed agreements of confidentiality. So they may continue doing their, you know, analysis, or they can continue speculating or saying what they say. We have signed confidentiality agreements with all the people that we're talking to. So we're really not in a position to actually speak at this point. I think suffice to say that we think we're making sufficiently good progress. We think that the country should understand that this is something that needs to be done. We think that we should, as a country, look at the benchmarks internationally. Look at the BPs, look at your Petronas's, look at your totals and see how did they start to actually be where they are. Most of them started off as national oil companies with nothing, and they had built themselves from the point. So what I guess we would like to request from the committee is please give us your support in terms of some of these things that we're trying to do. It's not easy because of the fact that there are all these constraints to say you try to, you know, bite more than you can chew. Can you fund it? Can you afford it? Can you run it? Have you got the capacity? We are trying to deal with all those issues. And please understand if I'm unable to go into any detail about any of the transactions that we are busy trying to negotiate. And I must state a lot of them are in very early stages. And I think it would be probably tantamount to scuppering some of those negotiations if we have to now start saying to which point we are. Because we do know for a fact that there are a lot of competitors for the things that we're trying to do. I'm sure the honorable members know that this is the only country on the continent which has got regulated margins where you are quite sure of how much money you make, and if you under-recover, government tops you up, and that's what the law says. So why wouldn't I want to be here and use this as a way of sort of leveraging and managing my risk in the other parts of the continent? I would love to be. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So we're not the only people here trying to get into the downstream, because this is a very lucrative and interesting market to be. So I think that would be my request. Perhaps a chair, and maybe at some point, a little bit further down the line, we can be able to speak a little bit more. We're hiding nothing. We're just respecting some of the agreements that we've signed with the different entities. I'll come to the MPFD. I think that one sort of wraps it up. There was a honorable member was asking, why is everybody in Hollywood in the company? Actually, we're in Hollywood. honorable member, actually, you asked where is the president. We currently, you know, I think earlier on there was this discussion about our transformation, the journey that we're traveling on. Prior to all of this, I mean, the nomenclature that we used at Pedro SA was that you had a president and then you had vice president, president and CEO. That's about nomenclature. It's really very American, yeah, I think it's very American. But what we've done now is the head of the company that reports to the board is the CEO. That would be myself, right? And then the other executives are still using the nomenclature that we've had up to this point that we haven't changed. But in reporting terms, the acting vice president and the vice presidents are reporting to the chief operations officer at this moment in time. And perhaps down the line, we're going to look at the nomenclature. It's just about what name we're using. Why are they acting? It's a good question. It's because of the fact that for a while, when the previous incumbents had left, we put in acting people into their positions. You would have heard a little bit earlier that we are in the process of moving our company to structure it in a manner that is commensurate with the strategy that we have. We are also in the process of making certain appointments. And I'm sure by the time we come...
Sorry, rude and to cut you. Please,
thank you.
Stick to the tradition. We're doing very well. Some of the heads have rot. Just as blunt as that. No.
Not yet.
But I think I'm right, but never mind.
No, okay. Honestly, we haven't had any heads that rolled. Our trading manager left. Our president for trading and supply and logistics. Vice president, she left. And then we've got an acting. She resigned. It wasn't a rolling head. And we also have our acting upstream, and we still have our VP. So nobody's gone, actually. Okay. I think those are two acting. Oh, the CFO, the contract came to an end. After having been in the company for 10 years, we got a 5-year contract, and the contract came to an end. So we have an active CFO until such time that we will soon have a CFO. So, no, thank you. The issue of Mbilana, I think, yes, exciting. We do have other projects on hand. We work closely on the location of these projects with the department. So department, in an identification process, will say these are the areas that are most needy, and please could you kindly assist here. So we work very closely with the department. And I think we've got one coming up very soon as well. encounter. The issue of the through PFA, why did it take so long? No, actually, the issue here is that we did we applied for a permanent exemption, but we were only given 1 year. And then immediately, soon after that, when we were told we were given 1 year, we then started to negotiate for an extension to that one. The negotiations are still in progress. We are requesting, and is a grantor. So we would love the grantor to grant us the extension yesterday. But we are not getting that exemption at this point. We would really like to get it as soon as possible. It will make our life a lot easier. So if there's any assistance, we would really appreciate it. And I just want to say, I must apologize. I wasn't taking the 33% non-achievement as light. I was trying to also spin a word like in English, because everybody has been having these wonderful phrases here. But what I was actually trying to say, I think I didn't articulate myself properly. Yes, we take it very seriously that we didn't achieve 33%, especially because among that 33%, if you look at what some of them are, it's your trading, where we wanted to increase our sales in terms of certain areas of trading, and we could not. And that has got a direct impact on our profit and loss or income statement as well. So we take it extremely seriously, even though, I must say, there were certain volumes that we did achieve, but in terms of expressing the manner in which we are taking seriously, we're saying, look, if we didn't get where we wanted to, then it's not achieved. And what steps have we taken? We have put in measures to improve on all those elements that we have not managed to achieve. So I think next year, when we come back, we will definitely have a different story, because we, in fact, as we speak now, we have started to put our measures into place. This was referring to reflecting what the annual report looked like, but we have started doing that. The issue of why are we always repeating irregular transactions? These are basics. Chair, I think I agree very much with you. But if we look at two or so of those were related to, it was at the time of, at the time when the Harris thing was done, and there were two of them, which were during the time when the Harris appointment was made and the Talentine appointment was made. And it was, I think, not our processes, but it was at the time an individual that utilized his methodology to do the procurement didn't correspond with the manner in which we do our procurement in the company. So I think what has now happened is that we will not find those type of transactions, deliberate transactions or deliberate deviations from the policy. The one of the wealth stream, I think the CFO was trying to explain that because the threshold is 200 million, at the time that the procurement committee approved it, they were within their rights at the time. But then because of the rand-dollar exchange rate, when it was time to pay, it had already moved to 241 million. I guess if we were a company that hedges, we might have been able to have foreseen that and had a real exposure. But it had moved. And when that happens, then you have to report it as an irregular. But I'm pleased to say that post that, what has happened is that that transaction has gone to the board and has been irregularized at the board level. Has been regularized. So next year's financials, you won't see it as an irregular procurement. So I guess it's a philosophical question to say, why do these things happen, you know? We try our level best to make sure that everything is done according to processes and procedures. And we've got, as you correctly said, Chair, we've got the systems in place to be able to detect when things go off. Then, of course, you've got to deal with the people element. And I'm sure we try our level best to make sure that people are aligned to what is happening by using our performance management systems, by using our reporting systems, and appealing to the importance of ethics and sticking to the rules within the company. Because if you don't, it's very difficult. You've got 1,300 people, and if they're all going in a different direction, it starts to cause chaos and anarchy. So yes, we repeatedly even have what we call fraud prevention workshops, fraud awareness workshops, and all of that, so that you appeal to the hearts and the minds of people to actually stick within the rules, even though sometimes it takes a little longer when you do stick within the rules. So we do try and do some of those interventions. I'm afraid I can't answer the why. I think if I could, I would be somewhere else. Then there's a lot of questions about EG. I'm going to ask Andrew Dipenna to deal with the EG farm out in detail in terms of some of the issues raised. And then Mabatu is going to deal with the enterprise development. Yes. How robust are we actually going to be? What are the plans? And I think bringing Mabatu into Petrese was a first reaction to say we need to put a body that actually deals with it so that we can move from where we are and improve. Did you find out? Oh, the litigation, yes. Crystal, will you do with the litigation? Will you be able to go into the detail of two? Okay, we'll get the other. All right, thank you. And then international, don't you go with the department? Yes, when you get invited, you do go with the department. I guess the question is, what exactly is your international strategy and how do you go about it? And our international strategy is informed first and foremost from DIRCO in terms of the countries that South Africa engages with in. And then from our department, we do get directed. For example, if they would like us to accompany them to a particular country, then we do that. Sometimes you have multilaterals and then you have bilaterals. And the different desks in the DIRCO also are very active in terms of giving guidance and suggesting opportunities that avail themselves. What we do is we look at that according to what our strategy in terms of the countries that we want to engage in and whether it also suits the fact that decisions that we have taken to say we don't go into exploration, we're interested in an upstream perspective in producing and near producing, and that would have to come through the system to be evaluated to say, is this something we want to get involved in? But I must say, Chair, the decision that has been taken in Petrese that we are focusing a lot of our attention on South Africa, around the coast of South Africa, inside our own system of strength so that we can enhance the robustness. That's where we are putting a lot of effort. If other opportunities avail themselves from some of these countries, which I said we are guided by DIRCO, our department and our international strategy, then we do assess. But it's not the first thing that we do, and I think I must be honest here to say perhaps it's because, as had been mentioned a bit earlier, we went into different countries, e.g., there was EG mentioned, and there was also Egypt mentioned, and we have impairments and so on. I must say that the risk level and our risk appetite in terms of some of these other areas has quite diminished to the point that we would rather concentrate our efforts around the coast of Southern Africa, as it were, including Namibia. There was a mention to say, what are you doing about Namibia? Yes, we are talking to the state-owned entity in Namibia with regards to some of the opportunities around there. So the answer in a nutshell is we're not sort of very robust and running up there. We are first concentrating at home to make sure that we can make our plants sustainable, so we need that gas to make the country sustainable, the company sustainable. But secondly, we then look at any other opportunities that might complement our current strategy. If they don't complement our strategy, we are unable to. And really, this is about, Chair, it's about funding issues and funding capabilities and affordability. And we've prioritized the little reserves or cash reserves that we have. We're prioritizing them into those projects that I mentioned earlier, which is Ikwezi, which is trying to get grow our company into further downstream in the country and the region, and also looking at the alternate feedstock plus being a gas aggregator in the country. Okay, I've got a volunteer here. My CFO said I'll deal with all these things. Okay. Huh? Oh, Saber. Okay, all right. But you can deal with it as well. It's fine. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Oh, MPRDA. Yeah. Look, we've got, I think the MPRDA is now being discussed in the country. And if members recall, we spoke about last time, this is the current Petrese we have, this is where we want to be. We're talking about growth trajectory. What are the enablers? We talk about funding being one of the enablers, infrastructure, and the other thing is legislation, amenable legislation to get us to where we want to be. So currently, in the manner that the MPRDA is written at this point in time, it is not assisting in enabling us to get to where we want. So basically, very shortly, just to say, we would like to see certain changes that allow us to be able to operate in a different way. We think that, you know, we have to be designated as a state-owned entity, designated. We'll talk about, like in most countries of the world, the national oil company has got a state right in terms of free carry. So those are some of the issues that we're talking about in the exploration phase. You get free carry, and then the development phase, because you can go and get reserve-based lending, you can then participate and contribute. I must say in Angola, they don't even participate in the development phase. I mean, you've got to carry them for quite a bit, and then you pay royalties on top of that. So when you see some other countries, I mean, other national oil companies are owning jets and they own half of the city, you need to understand that they had to start from somewhere. So currently, there's uncertainty around all of this issue of the free carry, but those would be some of the things that we've been interested in. And then we talk about the issue of abandonment. You know, it's very important. When you do abandonment in the mining sector and you do abandonment in the petroleum sector, it's not the same. So if you're using the abandonment criteria for the abandonment of a mine and use that for our business, is very different. You understand, ours is hugely capital intensive, our business. The mining industry, people say it's capital intensive, but when you start talking about drilling and offshore drilling and exploration, then you talk seriously capital intensive. So you can't have the same levies and the same processes in terms of those type of things. If you need to use the same formula, which is the current situation now, for the abandonment of mines, and you use that formula for us, it shoots your abandonment costs straight into the air, and it's really not a tenable situation. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. Looking at what about the issue of penalties and fines if you contravene, if you what percentage of income if you contravene the MPRDA. And again, it's why, because your capital intensity is not the same. Secondly, your mining area is highly people intense in terms of employment. Actually, in our area, it's not that people intense. So you can't approach those things in the same way. So these are some of the I guess the changes that we talk about. We also talk about license terms to say, how is it? Is it 7 years? What you do? Is it a 7-year change? Is it a 5-year change? What happens when it expires? You can't take the same basis of mining and use it in the what you call it, in the petroleum exploration rights. So I think in general, maybe those are some of the things that we're talking about. What about when you know acreage has to be relinquished? What do you do? You know, who does it go to? Must it just go out in the open? Or are we saying that it must go through a round of negotiations, or if there are existing partners, who gets the first right? Those things are not clear in terms of our petroleum area. So we've got some thoughts about how we think that some of these things would have to work so that it can actually enable even growth. Because right now, you know, we're not a hugely hydrocarbon country, but we think that there's a potential. So even to enable the growth of that, there's some things that have to change, and they cannot be exactly the same. We're a mining country, and that's why the focus and the bias is on mineral mining. But these two things are not the same, and they cannot be handled the same. And really, that's the crux of what we're saying. Oh, staff morale. Yes. How are we managing with staff morale, because we're undergoing a change? In the fact that when you're trying to introduce change, you always get resistance to change. And you need to manage that resistance in terms of trying to buy people's hearts and minds to walk on the journey. What we espouse, Chair, to the company is that we're selling communicating hope. We're saying, continuing everything, this is where we end up. But if we do things differently, this is where we end up. And I'm sure nobody, Chair, on the one works on the premise that nobody wakes up in the morning to be disappointed or to do nothing. Everybody wakes up to succeed in something, and that's what drives people. Inherently, every human being wakes up and wants to go to work wherever and add value and succeed. So if you're able to sell the vision and the strategy and demonstrate how that can be achieved, then you start to win the hearts and minds of people in terms of walking along that journey and contributing as much as they can. I think there's nothing that builds morale more than seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. It's where there's no light at the end of the tunnel that you have a huge problem with morale. And I think that's probably how we've been trying to manage it. We are planning to bring in transition management and change management interventions at the right time. But right now, it's from communicating very often with the employees, making sure the vision is crystal clear, making sure the steps that take us there are crystal clear, and who has to do what in terms of that journey that we're taking. That's how we're trying to deal with the issue of raising the staff morale. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CFO.
Thank you, Zio. I'll just touch through you, Chair, on the issue of SEBA impairments and a bit on the first question that I was asked. In the case of SEBA, it is indeed a profitable asset in the sense that for the year just ended, we've made 232 million rand out of sales of 483 million rand. If we compare that with our other avenues of income streams, it is indeed a very good asset because that's 48% return on sales. And in terms of the payback period, we have invested 5.6 billion rand in this asset purchase price, and the payback period, i.e. the period by which we have received back the money that invested in this asset, is 5.5 years, or five and a half years. So it is indeed a very good asset. Also, what's happening is there's further development that's required in the asset itself, and our portion of that development cost is the tune of some $300 million. And because it's a good asset, we are going to be able to go to the funding community out there and raise funding to finance this development cost, courtesy of it being a good asset. So it is indeed a good asset. And I think the other advantage of this performance is that we begin to build a track record for ourselves as an entity in the funding community, which then again helps us in our other ventures with the other assets that we may want to pursue further down the stream. On the matter of impairments, we have already impaired in our books Equatorial Guinea to the tune of 1.142 billion rand and Egypt to the tune of 1.412 billion rand for Equatorial Guinea. These amounts have already been written off our books. We've already impaired these amounts. The reason for impairment is that the subsidiary is not going to be able to pay these amounts to the holding company and hence the impairment. The 186 million rand that we have in our books in respect of Equatorial Guinea is an intra-company transaction because the subsidiary is being charged interest on the loan amount by the holding company. But at the top, on consolidation, this will have a nil effect. The other matter that was raised was that of tax. The tax amount that we have in our books is actually a credit in the income statement in the sense that it is a positive charge, but it's an accounting treatment. What happens is that when we purchase the Equatorial Guinea, the taxman looks at the book value of those assets, whereas from an accounting point of view, we look at what you actually paid for those very same assets. So there was a fair value, what we call a fair value adjustment. Then that created also a tax credit, or what you call a deferred tax credit, which we are now unwinding in the books over time. So it's not a real tax payment that we made to the taxman, but it's an accounting adjustment that we passed through the books to reflect that fair value adjustment. On the matter of guarantees, I think guarantees are one of many funding forms that we are looking at executing on this strategic path that we are following in order to acquire the various assets that we would like to have. And we may approach the shareholder in the form of a recapitalization or in the form of guarantees or in the form of loans. So it's one of many various ways that we are following in terms of funding our various projects in order to be working through the shareholder to make sure that this does happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Jill. So, your Chair. Honorable, when it comes to women representation at Petro SA, we're aiming to have 35% representation by 2016. So that's how our total makeup should look like. Where are we at currently? were sitting at 29.7%. So the numbers or the figures that were flashed on screen are yearly targets. So on a yearly basis, we set a target. For example, if we say 30% this year, that 30% in fact, it means 1% growth. That's what it means. Okay? So by the end of the financial year, we'll be sitting at 30% representation. And then the following year and. And now the question is, how do we tend to get there? We have quite a number of programs in place that are going to get us to the 35% representation. One, our bursary program is such that, let me check the numbers, we have 44% representation of women, so which means when they finally graduate, then become graduates in training, and that comes our pipeline. In terms of our current graduates in training, 62% of them are women. So if I don't say then in terms of the operational needs and our growth will be able to take those on board, then already we have people who are ready to fill in some of these positions. Also, when you look at our internal development, we have a leadership development program, which is a 4-tier program. People then, we take them at supervisor level, management, senior management, executive levels. At all those programs, we have a set target of women. So those are the strategies that are in place to take us to the 35%. Okay. Then coming back to the disability one. We're not doing good, yes. The first thing that we did, I think we took an overall target and we made it a yearly target. 3% is a goal by 2016. On a yearly basis, we're supposed to achieve at least 2% representation of the total population. Where are we at currently? Federal State is sitting at 1.7 in terms of people with disabilities. That translates to about 31 employees. And at the end of the financial year, we should be sitting at 34 individuals, and that will give us 2% representation. And then going to 2016, then we hope that on a year basis, we're going to set ourselves a 2% target, which is going to bump us up by a percentage or so to take us into the 3% that we're looking for. But according to what are we doing? For people with disabilities, we have been having a recruitment policy which was written by us, which has been stifling a bit. Because then it didn't give us the latitude to recruit for people with disabilities the way not an ordinary manner. Right now we can go to radios, it's given us liberating, in fact. So we have then developed a disability policy that focuses just on recruitment of people with disabilities. Secondly, we have partnered up with the CPTU, Cape Peninsula Technology University, one of those things, okay, that what we're going to do with that relationship is that we are funding 12 students, okay? They are our bursars. And when they graduate in 2 years' time, federal state is going to take them on board as GITs. That immediately then bumps our numbers of people with disabilities up. So that is the strategy. Secondly, the business might not grow in terms of recruitment, because then all along we have been depending on recruiting people with disabilities. But now we say, let's go our own chamber. That's the approach that we're taking as a business. The second thing that we're doing then is to create awareness within the company. The 31 people that are currently sitting with in our disability teams are employees who have disclosed their disabilities and they've been verified and confirmed as such. So what it means then, if we continue with the campaign of creating awareness, we might then unearth more disabilities within our own staff members. So those are some of the strategies that the state then is undertaking in order to get to the 3% target mark, which is aimed, we are aiming to achieve that by 2016. So that's basically what we're doing to get to that target. Okay. Thank you.
You didn't mention Nelson Mandela.
Yes, we're counting him too. Okay. Oh, the Nelson Mandela Bay NNMU. Oh, that's a joke. Okay. I first referred the old man. That's a tick. Okay. Now, the NNMU relationship is also being utilized as a vehicle to get us the correct number in terms of our disabilities. I must, though, state right now is that the other reason why we're struggling to get people, we're not looking for administrators or HR people. We're looking for people with disabilities but can operate within the technical environment of the business. So that's our approach. So the students that are going to come in the technical are coming from IT, they're engineers, so they're coming from the technical stream of the business. So that is the approach of the business right now. Thanks.
You kindly deal with the progress on the summit.
Right. Chair, thank you, honourable members. The Equatorial Guinea has been a challenge to Petrobras in terms of its farm-out process. We embarked on a farm-out process almost a year ago, and that sort of came to a halt in approximately June this year when the partner that we were dealing with negotiating at that point in time withdrew their offer. We are in the process of going to the market again, and we hope to secure a farming partner in the next couple of months. The block is of significant interest to the petroleum community. There have been some discoveries to the north and the east by the likes of Noble Energy, etc., and there is a lot of interest in the block. As has been pointed out by the Honourable Member, Petrobras' philosophy has been to reduce its equity in these blocks, so Petrobras is looking at a significant farm out portion, to farm out a significant portion of its equity.
Mabacho, please, could you do me that development?
Thank you. Chair, I think enterprise development has been a challenge for the organization, purely on the basis that when it was initiated, it was a pilot program that was intended to give Petrobras an opportunity to offer opportunities for those who were excluded from the previous regime in terms of participating in the oil and gas industry. That led to a limited approach being adopted by the organization, focusing on limited beneficiaries. As things are unfolding, in particular with the revised BBB codes that we are currently soon to be embracing, I think tomorrow they are being gazetted, we also had to align our business approach and strategy. And this has been done. We now have a framework which is called Enterprise and Supplier Development, purely to make sure that we broaden the base of the beneficiaries that are going to be coming to Petrobras, to also make sure that the approach as we implement the strategy, we are also aligned to the rules and regulations which are currently being debated. We also had to make sure that we oil the organization in terms of the processes that are being followed to accommodate the new approach. What we are doing now, we are also negotiating with the procurement department currently to say that can we open certain procedures to be able to bring in more suppliers who are black, who are female, who are co-ops within the system. And that we've currently achieved. We now have the enterprise and supplier procedure manual which guides how we are going to be selecting and supporting these businesses. The other thing that we've done, Chen, now we can comfortably be able to articulate what type of business development support we are going to be offering to our companies. The oil and gas industry requires a particular intelligence and knowledge and skills and expertise for businesses to be sustained. So we don't want to invite companies and also leave them on their own. So through the training that we are going to be offering in business development support, it is tailor-made to the oil and gas industry. And currently we are also looking at bringing enterprise and supplier development specialist organizations that are going to be working in imparting some of the skills and the knowledge. And that we have currently finalized. We have 14 companies that are going to be working with us throughout South Africa, targeting different types of enterprises that we want to support. Again, I emphasize women, co-ops, rural and urban areas. So that is how we are currently looking at it. We have also managed to, as I'm sitting here, I can probably say that we've received 30 applications. We have opened the invitations for new suppliers to apply to our programs. So as I'm sitting here, I can report that we have 30 applications and we are still receiving more. We are going to be evaluating those. Next week, we would know the type of companies that we are going to be supporting from our side, which are going to be more than the four that we've been continuously supplying. The other intervention that we had, so that we run as fast as we can, we are also engaging with our IT people because we don't want to be using the manual way of interacting with our suppliers. There's iPads, there's iPhones, there's smartphones. So we are also trying to make sure that the IT systems, communication systems of PRSA in terms of enterprise and supply development are geared towards that. Click a button, they get the information. If they require certain information, they can be able to also send it to us in as fast as they can. we have also successfully managed to kind of like test a new approach from Petro-SA side, taking some of the supply that we've already been supporting to exhibitions, because we feel that they have to stand on their own to be able to do business on their own network and see what other successful oil and gas suppliers are doing. We recently took a few to the exhibition in Joburg, and it went well. And we're going to continue to do that. We also want to explore the region and international if we can, because that is how great suppliers should be operating. And this is a model that we are also inculcating. Around
Kaibamba. For now.
Okay, thank you. So that's how robust it's going to be.
I think, members, it does give us an idea. What is left now is that, once again, microscope as we move along in future.
Okay, thank you very much. I think there was one question that I didn't quite sort of pick up with regards to the litigation. Chair mentioned that there is a litigation, but I didn't quite... Oh, Audit Chair is going to pick that up. Okay, thank you very much. Audit Chair is going to pick it up. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. The Chair has asked some questions earlier about the internal audit function and what is it doing in terms of identifying the actions and the breaches that are happening, and also talking about Petro-SA itself as to saying how, what is it that it's doing to clean up and how it's going to clean up all the shenanigans that have happened all along. Chair, one of the things that I'm to bring to the committee that following on your question of saying that why didn't we write down all the responses from the audit committee around the investigations that are happening. One of the difficulties that we faced with is the fact that quite a lot of work within the investigation has not been finalized. It's still being investigated. So if the legal people always call it sub judice, so it will be quite difficult for one to just write what we are still going to do. So the ones that we have done, we can report on those ones as we have reported on the annual report. An example of that is around the irregular expenditure and the wasteful and fruitless ones, where you see the hurries which was reported on as an example. That one was quite an irregular expenditure and which contained some retainer income from on the Harry point of view, and the board and the audit committee actually looked at this and said actually because of the fact that the transaction itself was irregular, the appointment was irregular, it then makes the retainer continuously irregular. So then they from the audit committee then through to the board, there was a recommendation that this contract should be cancelled completely. Which was automatically done, and then the debt has been finalized and it's been cancelled as well. And also there has been some quite a few others that a few others like the legal appointment within one of the lawyers who was advising on the transaction, who was appointed initially paid off some 13 million rand or so that was given to them. That has been identified as regular, and it's part of the items that are within the investigations. But what's important around all these items that have been are being investigated and finalized from investigation is that both boards from PSA and the ones of CCC have sat down and formed a joint committee where the joint committee were given a task, one solid task of finalizing these particular investigations and make sure that we meet and finalize this and come to a close on them. And that has been done. The recommendations have now come out and have been given to both boards, the actions that should be taken from Petro-SA. It's a matter of days since that action has been done. Action should be coming out from Petro-SA, and another action should be coming out from the CEF side. Now, one of the other things that I must mention is that during the current year, there has been two resignations from the audit committee. And then those two resignations were the two chairs of the audit committee. The one was because of work pressure, but the other one was because of the discomfort around what was happening within the audit committee. And then obviously, Chair, the board has decided that it should not just leave the audit committee without a chair. So that was resolved. And then we moved on to actually get to the point where we are now. We are actually continuing with running the board audit and the committee. One, Chair, the other issue that I need to mention is that the BEC had raised the flag as early as in November 2011, the flag in terms of these items to happening. And this was because of the management override. Now, from there, that item was then reported to the board around the same time in November 2011, and the audit committee were then advised to internal audit. Internal audit also wrote a memo at some point during the same period, and actually gave it to the internal audit wrote a memo and actually gave it to the audit committee and then to the board about the same issues. So the involvement of internal audit was actually there, and also the involvement of the board audit and risk committee was there. And then a further report then was then written sometime in July 2012 by the internal audit into the board. But then you will recall as well that the Gobodo, the Zaluba Gobodo audit firm or forensic company was appointed to actually conduct the investigations, which was done. And then that is something that was then finalized into joint committees to make sure that it gets finalized. So Chair, there was quite a lot of work that was already done within the audit committee, the board, and also in the audit committee. And then Chair, see there's a note here. The other thing that's very important, which he's mentioning, is around the fact that all the finalized issues have already been reported to the police, have been reported to the SIU, has been reported to all the law enforcement agencies to make sure that the amounts which are recoverable should be recovered. And then obviously internally there's still some disciplinary and inquiry processes that are happening, which are happening at different levels, at executives and all kinds of levels which are actually happening. So that is a process that is a work in progress that is happening right now. So from a litigation point of view, there's going to be some recoveries. We're hoping that the law enforcement agencies will actually help us in actually making sure that the money that have been lost will be recovered.
I don't know if I'm leaving anything else.
Yeah. Thank you, Rich.
Yeah, I know we've been at it, so we might lose out on a few things. But when we reflect, we may pick up a few things and make a follow-up, obviously. Yes, Prof.
On that page 19, I sense the CEO is asking for our assistance on the exemption, which has been delayed for more than a year. I want to propose to them to assist us to assist them. What is this exemption? What is this advantage? Because me, whoever that grantor, which I don't know, So I'm proposing that they should lift that and give more information. So as a committee, try to assist them. Thank you.
The grantor is National Belgium. I won't make noise. And I won't shout it. Thanks, Prof. Honourable Member, thanks very much. And as I say, we've been at it from about 9:25 in the morning. Yeah, it has been quite a long road, but necessarily so, because if this institution is restructuring for the better, we also have to pay our duty and ensure that's okay. I like the penetrative questions. I hope you take them as they come in that good spirit that they are aiming to strengthen you. But unfortunately, smiling for now, looking at the honourable members, we still hold our microscope. We might even get new ones for 2014. And for those who are coming back, we will not stop at that. The stronger you become, the more sophisticated are going to be our microscope, because you'll be bigger. It'll be your Sonangol, Petrobras, and Gazprom, and all of that.
So it means we also have to be sharp on ourselves, on behalf of people of South Africa, obviously, in the interest of the country, not just in our own self-aggrandizement to say we've ticked the box, we've done our job. But as for now, I think we have a sense of the members that really the current team has had and is still trying its best under the leadership of the department. The Peter's standard has left, I suppose she's rushing for her plane, but we do expect the department still to up the scales. Remember, one of the things we have been lamenting about the members, which the department has considered as well, is that they have strengthened their oversight capacity on the state-owned entities as well. But we shouldn't look at that as just the supervisor to say, but Matt Kelly is. It also has a support function as well to get you stronger. I'm glad you've raised that component of working, you know, within the DIRCO framework, because even the department obviously does that close to the DIRCO, like DTI and other similar orgs. You know, supposedly, you know, departments that have close that within that international arena. But we hope in future, particularly when you come back in April next year presenting your plans, you'll be more upfront and maybe more elaborate, you know, on the international component, because you don't play in the local, regional and continental platform only. You're part of BRICS. You've signed a couple of agreements, not necessarily as per se, but as a government. So we expect you to harvest on that, also, and more than harvest for that matter. My last point is that when we were bidding the late Gerard Debesy, the former CEO of BP, also if you remember, something very interesting was raised there, that he had a passion for Petroleum Institute. I suppose that Petroleum Institute was a concept and idea coined within Zambia, which Peruese is part of. Don't say anything now. I'm glad I'm saying it right at the end. But I would like you to come back next time to tell us how far are you in that. I see you're nodding. I really sense that that was a project within Zambia. I'm raising it because slowly, at the end of the day, it's not about CPUT, you know, Nelson Mandela University. You're doing something at UWC as well, isn't it? You see, you know, it's about looking then at the whole program holistically. In other words, what are you doing in a comprehensive sense to drive the skill development in the oil and gas industry or in the petroleum industry? Mutombo is going to have a petrochemical component downstream. Crude oil produces more than 200 products, isn't it? Who's going to handle that? I know when this was raised, one of the members at DUT, Devon University of Technology, last in January, when at a stakeholders meeting, DUT expressed its interest as well. But once again, those expressions of interest to me should be handled in a comprehensive way, not fragmented. I think that's my parting shot. Otherwise, let me say for now, thanks very much. You have given us enough ammunition to make our recommendations and compile a report at the end of this route by the end of next week. For now, thanks very much, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned. We'll be meeting on Tuesday, for which entities? NERSA on Tuesday. Yes. Thank you very much. That's all the rest.